My name's Bernadette Russell. Welcome to How to Be Hopeful, my podcast all about hope, how to find it and how to keep hold of it once you've found it. I should let you know, in case you don't know, that I've also written a book of the same name, which was out on September the 10th, which is available in all the usual places. And hopefully you might be inspired by this podcast and go and order it from wherever you usually buy your books. I was really pleased this week to talk to two young 15-year-old activists, Sarah and Neil. And it felt really important this week to give another platform to young people in a week that it feels like they've been blamed for the rise in COVID, for misbehaving, which seemed really, really unfair to me, as young people often find themselves in shared accommodation because their wages aren't enough to ensure that they can live alone or buy anywhere. Often have to travel on public transport because they might not be able to afford cars, and often end up doing the jobs that are public and front-facing and higher risk. And on top of that, I think we're all equally responsible and have equally behaved badly and well, doing our best in the face of shambolic and confusing advice from the government. And if I sound a little bit annoyed, it's because I am. I think young people have been and are amazing at the forefront of the Black Lives Matter protests and at the forefront of the climate crisis protests, and really demanding things of us and demanding that we open our eyes and we make real change. So, yep, I think they're pretty amazing. I'm always humbled and really pleased to learn from young people. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Thank you for listening. So thank you both so much for talking to me today. Could I ask you, Sarah, first of all, to introduce yourself?
Of course. My name's Sarah Aksoy. I'm 15 years old.
And Neil, could I ask you to do the same?
I'm Neil Brink. I'm 15 years old as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. So before we get on to the strange and kind of wonderful circumstances in which the three of us met, I just wondered if I could ask you, maybe first Sarah, about how the lockdown's been for you and what it's been like being off school and all that stuff.
I genuinely never thought I would actually say this, but for me as well, I started school again last Friday. It was rather odd to start at the end of the week, but honestly, it made me realise how much I'd actually miss school. I find it quite, you know, hard in terms of time management to do work outside of school and everything like that. But genuinely, I think the highlight of my whole lockdown and the end of lockdown, should I say, was to be able to go out and protest again for different things, specifically because it was all of the kind of things that happened during quarantine. It just gave you that opportunity to kind of come up and go against it, which I found was so nice to be able to do again. It's when I really found that I was getting my freedom back in some sense.
I think it's been a particularly difficult time for young people. And I'm really pleased to hear that you felt sort of empowered by that. That's great. Was there anything else, Sarah, about lockdown that you liked, if it's possible to say that?
I guess to a certain extent, this might be something interesting to actually talk about, but before lockdown had happened back in December, I applied for National Youth Theatre and I was going to audition, which I did. But because of lockdown, I had to do an online audition, which was a first for basically everyone in the company. And I did manage to get in, but it was such a different experience. And it was kind of, in some sense, again, nice to know that, you know, all of these 5,000 people auditioning kind of was going through the same thing. And it was a brand new experience. And it showed us, like, the difference technology can actually make and the kind of chances that it gives all of us, in some sense.
Yeah, it was really nice. I think it forced a lot of us to perhaps engage with technology or use it in a way that we might have put off or not used or dismissed. Yeah. So that's, well, congratulations. That's amazing.
You.
So I look forward to seeing you at the National soon. And Neil, if I could just speak to you for a moment, how was lockdown for you? And that's a big question.
For me, it's definitely been a lot less stressful than, you know, going into school every day. And so I guess I had a little bit more freedom. I could do what I wanted. So I spent most of my lockdown just studying my languages, pretty much stuff like that. Although one negative aspect of lockdown, which I did miss, was probably the fact that I wasn't able to go out to protest. And so that gap from March, I believed, to September the 1st, it felt so strange not being able to protest. I did take part in the digital online protest that Greta Thunberg started, though I didn't really attend anything in person since the October Extinction Rebellion protest of last year.
Could you talk to us a little bit about the online protest that you mentioned that Greta initiated?
Of course. So I remember this year I was going to go to the February protest of this year, which was the Friday for Future one, but I couldn't go because I was going to see some family in South Africa then. So there was another one in March, and so I promised to myself that I would go to that protest, and then that one got cancelled because of the unfortunate circumstances that took place. So then what Greta Thunberg did is she started, you take a photo with your sign that she made, and then you post it with the hashtag climate strike online, I believe. And so that took off. And so I decided to participate in that, so I could still at least feel like I was making my voice heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I noticed about you two were how brilliant your homemade signs were. Just absolutely loved them. And do you know what, Neil? That's another really good point, in a different way, in connecting to what Sarah said about this positive use of social media and digital technologies. That's another example of it in a really different way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a good thing that now we live in an era where we can use social media to communicate next protests or future events, so mm-hmm. it's a lot more accessible, whereas in the past you wouldn't really have been able to do that.
No, it's a whole other platform for all of us, isn't it? And then in general, Neil, do you find that space, the sort of social media space as a young person, do you find it a positive experience?
I think you need to be mindful of how you use social media, in my opinion. I think it can be quite helpful if you use it in the right context. That being said, using it not all the time, using it to check out family and friends, using it to be wary of future events, then that way it's very, very positive. But I think that also could be quite detrimental if you start to compare yourself to people on social media.
Yeah, it's a sort of a way of hurting yourself in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's never a good idea to get into comparisons. And what about you, Sarah? Do you find it largely positive or negative or a mix? Or
this is going to go really near to what Neil said, but social media is such a platform that it really depends on how you use it. There are so many people on the platform that also use it for very negative things in comparison to us ourselves. So again, it's really important to kind of look out at the things you're doing on there and to make sure you're, you know, doing the right things, because no matter what side you're on, there can be one thing that you can do that in some way it can influence your life basically forever and for the rest of everything. And it could make a complete change, whereas you could do that to someone else as well, but it could be positive just as well as it could be negative.
Yeah, that's such a good insight that it's recognising its power, isn't it? And that power can be malevolent or benevolent. I'm gonna sort of throw you to a little bit of curveball here, because the podcast and my recent work has been about hope, but active hope. So thinking about hope in terms of if we can feel hopeful, it gives us the fuel to take action, because we at least believe, we hope that our actions can result in change. So given that, before we get onto your activism, you two, I'm going to ask you, first of all, Sarah, has anything happened this week that's made you feel hopeful?
Actually, yes. And quite coincidentally, it's probably going to have to be the protest that we met at. Going to the protest again, it genuinely gave me so much hope, because I genuinely didn't think many people would be there, specifically because of Corona as well. And, you know, considering it's like the first Extinction Rebellion protest back, I didn't think that there would be so many people, but it was nice to see that there was probably more people than I'd seen before. Like, it was so, so, so nice. And you could really tell that every single person there was fighting for the same cause, and you knew that no one could stop you. And there was not one power that could just come out there and stop anyone that's standing there. And knowing that we were all together and, you know, fighting against the same cause, it was so, so nice to see. It gave me so much hope because, you know, it's such a huge number. And when you all know that this amount of people are aware of what's happening, it gives you so much, so much more hope.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I always try to encourage people, because I know it's not for everybody, particularly if you're, you know, if you're a little bit nervous, anxious, or you're an introvert. It's not always the right space, but I absolutely agree. How about you, Neil? What's given you hope this week? You can absolutely say the same things.
I am going to go with Sarah at the protest. When we got there, we were about an hour early, so
yeah.
You know, it did make me a little bit wary, but then as more and more people started to come, it felt quite empowering that we were all unified by one thing, and that one common thing between us that all made us angry and all made us hopeful was climate change. And so it felt like, in a way, a second family, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was such a positive experience as well. It felt like a music festival, genuinely. I remember as we were leaving, we saw a stand where you could make Extinction Rebellion tote bags and you could donate however much you wanted to donate. So me and Sarah donated and we made our own bags, and it made us feel like we were in, you know, some sort of community. It felt very nice.
That's brilliant. I'm going to come back to that in a minute because there's stuff about that I want to ask you. I wondered, because obviously the people that are listening aren't going to know the circumstances in which the particular moment in which we met. So, Neil, could you just explain to the listeners where we met and what was happening?
So, it was about, I'd say, 10:30 in Parliament Square.
On Tuesday, the 1st of September, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we were sat down on... Well, me and Sarah, we were sat down on Parliament Square. This was still quite early before the main protest happened. And so there were a few, I think it was Christian Extinction Rebellion protesters, very, very lovely people. So we sat down, we held up our signs, and then, you know, we just waited until the main thing happened. So that was when an old guy came up to us. He started calling us hypocrites, saying that we were on our mobile phones, saying that, you know, our generation was hypocritical because we were protesting climate change, but then think of the emissions it took to make that phone. So then Sarah stepped in and she said, well, 70% of the Earth's carbon emissions are made by 100 companies, and humans collectively make about 30% of the Earth's carbon emissions. He just kept on interrupting Sarah, whatever she said. She could not speak at all without him blabbering on about something. So then that was when you decided to step in.
So I should just say my side of it. So it's interesting to hear you say that. So what I saw was a very shouty older gentleman who looked like he was in a costume that he'd hired from a sort of, you know, an Alan Akeborn play or something. Yeah. With a cameraman, we should say, with a camera person in tow. That was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah,
a camera person in tow shouting at you two, and I didn't see you speaking. Sarah, well done for being armed with statistics and facts, because I was going to get onto that. I think it's really important. And sometimes, actually, when people challenge us, sometimes I think, okay, I'm going to make sure next time I've got even more information to have that argument. So in a way, it's a gift. But
yeah,
he was just super mean. And I know that you two are fully capable, intelligent people. But I've got my, like, big sister. I was like, yeah, I'm not having that. just wanted to check you were okay. So I didn't know that you, brilliant that you at least tried to address his concerns. But the impression I got, Sarah, I don't know what you think, was it he just looked like someone who was not interested in engagement or listening. He just kind of wanted to tell you off.
There was absolutely no way he was. When I first started talking, I just, you know, I didn't even see the cameraman. I just thought he was kind of just having a little go at us. And then I saw the cameraman, and as he started to talk over me and not let me speak, I just started to realise that no matter what I say and no matter what I do there, he's not going to listen to me, and he's just going to constantly speak over me to prove his point in his own sense. So I just chose to, after a while, just chose to stay quiet and just sit down and ignore him, because it felt so useless and it was really aggravating. But obviously throwing off a fit or showing my extreme emotions would probably actually lead to him getting what he wanted out of the kind of, I don't know what to call it, but, you know, trying to annoy us. I feel like he would have really got what he wanted from it. So I decided to just ignore him after a while. But it was upsetting because from one side, when I looked around, it was, we were the youngest people there. And I do think it was quite clear. So I said this before as well, but it was like he almost chose us specifically because he saw us to be more vulnerable than anyone else that was there.
I think he said it to him as well. He said it to him, pointed it out.
It was so upsetting to actually just, you know, be treated in that sense, because it is our future and it is what we need to do. And then considering I'm there, I obviously know some things. It was so, so, so sad to have someone assume that I wouldn't know anything about it and just come up to me like that.
No, it was very upsetting, and bravo to you. Absolutely, I think, made the right decision. I think actually ignoring people in certain circumstances is really powerful. And and you're right, both of you, about not giving him your anger and not giving him your, you know, because then he would have just had a film of you being angry or a film of you being upset. So, but it still requires strength. So seriously, bravo to you both. Plus, he should be thanking you for being there. But anyway, I felt really disappointed because I think we spoke about it a little bit. I was, what we were sort of saying, weren't we? Actually, it's really important that we engage in conversations, even if we disagree. But that was not a conversation.
Yeah, that was more of a one-sided thing, if anything
definitely
else.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you for that. Well, he disappeared, and then we had a chat, and then I recorded your amazing words, and then it disappeared because maybe he did something. I just wondered, first of all, Neil, if you could talk a little bit about why you went that day, why you attended that day, and what was going on that day, actually.
I went to that protest because I felt a sense of solidarity with people living in the global south. First of all, they're the ones that are going to be the most hard hit by climate change, especially people from Africa who have been targeted by systemic oppression and colonialism and laws in the past, and they're still trying to recover from that. So they're going to be the most hard hit by droughts and by hurricanes, typhoons, what have it. So, you know,
so you mentioned you've got a connection with South Africa, that's right. So
yeah,
is that part of the that's led you to sort of considering that and thinking about that?
I've been in South Africa earlier this year, so I saw firsthand, you know, well, as we were driving through Cape Town, I saw how incredibly divided by between rich and poor South Africa still is. And so I have massive amounts of sympathy towards those people because they didn't choose their circumstances. It's the old apartheid laws that chose their circumstances for them.
Okay, that's great. And how about you, Sarah? What were your motivations for being there that day?
Yeah, I completely do agree with Neil, but what else I do have to say is I'm really kind of controversial on whether how, you know, I don't want to say how political I should make this, but in some sense, it is the truth. The whole system, I guess, of the world, in some sense now, quite literally, is almost everywhere. It's capitalism. And this whole, you know, whether it's climate change, whether it's racial injustice, whether it's sexism, when you look at all of it, it all roots from capitalism. And so this isn't only a fight against climate change now. It's basically a fight against the root cause of many of the injustices and all of like the discrimination that's going on around the world, technically everywhere. And so that really just motivated me in some sense to come to the protest, because I'm not only standing against this for my own self, it's for everyone else that's on this planet, regardless of whether I know them or not.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And we'll get on to that a little bit as well, because I think it's super important to consider what we don't want. And also, I guess along with that, we've all got a duty to say, okay, so what are we going to replace it with? What do we want? But we'll get to that. I just wanted to go a little bit back to your tote bags, if I may. Because, no, seriously, I think there's been some criticism, which I don't think is fair, directed towards XR, that it's kind of a little bit sort of frivolous. And I'm a big fan of celebratory protest, because I think why not be joyful? And why not enjoy ourselves as well as trying to make positive change?
Of course.
And I just wondered, as young people, does that make it more welcoming, if you see what I mean, or easier to engage with, because, you know, you get to do creative artistic things and there's a wild samba band and it's sort of celebratory? Do you think that's the right way to go with protest, Neil, first of all?
Well, I think, first of all, going to the point where you said there's been a lot of slander and unjust accusations made towards Extinction Rebellion. Before we started protesting with Extinction Rebellion, my dad had the impression of their only goal is to get young people arrested. And so that was one of the reasons why he didn't want me to protest. But then we did go to the October one, and he said for himself that it was a lot, lot better than he thought. And he almost preferred it to the Friday for Future thing. So I feel like with the Extinction Rebellion protest with the tote bags, that's a really great way of standing out and saying, you know, as Boris Johnson said, he just thinks everyone in Extinction Rebellion are, as he says, crusties. Whereas, you know, if you've been to the protest, you'll see how incredibly diverse it is.
Yeah.
People from all backgrounds. So I guess with the tote bags, you can kind of display the diversity of Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah, it's what it leads back to what you said. I think it was you, Neil, that said it's about, it's family, isn't it? It's kind of helpful having it. I think it's really nice. And I found the joyfulness of it, all the wild dancing, people playing really loud drums, because I was quite next to the drums. I found that, I just think it's really nice. What, you know, why not? Sorry, just back to you for a moment. I know this, I'm not sure whether this will be difficult for you to answer or not, but I just wondered if you think it's effective thus far. You think specifically Extinction Rebellion actions, protests, roadblocks, etc. Do you feel that it's had some effectiveness?
To be fair, of course, yes, I do think they are quite effective. It's not only just in terms of the changes our protests have made, like in terms of law and things. It's also about, you know, with Neil, you were talking about how, you know, the protests are usually quite joyful and, you know, how they're quite musical and everything like that. Other than the fact that it makes it like a family, the level of how welcoming it makes it genuinely encourages others to join you as well, which from one side, it doesn't only encourage people to join you, but it also encourages people to research the cause and, you know, research the situation so they become more aware of it. So I think it's still effective, because even if, you know, to a certain extent, there is not many changes in the law, which there have been, you also do realise that, you know, people can start to make individual differences within their own lifestyle, which again can help and make a change.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to come back to that soon. It's true. And also, I think even a conversation with someone saying, what's this? What are you doing? That's the beginning, possibly, isn't it, of positive change, which feels really great. Yes, I find it really friendly as well. So sort of looking a little bit to the future and connecting that with hope. First of all, Neil, I wanted to ask you... if you could have like utopia dream time, if we just allow ourselves to go there for a moment, like forget about the obstacles, etc., etc., what would that look like for you? What would you hope for a really shining future by the time you are fully adult?
Maybe, for me, I would say that the future is definitely going to have to be a lot more sustainable than it actually is. And we should consume much more mindfully than we usually do. And so, I don't know, let me think of an example. Old clothes, we should donate them instead of thrifting them. We should...
don't worry, it's a big question. I was just thinking the clothes thing is good actually, because I've seen quite a few people like really getting into kind of making stuff
or
is it called upcycling, you know, like when you because fashion's one of the industries, isn't it, which has been quite disposable and quite guilty, I think.
And I also believe that, well, another example with the sustainable thing, we should stop using plastic water bottles and things like that and start using metal water bottles. Another thing that would be in my utopian society, going back to the whole capitalism aspect with Sarah, I don't think anybody should be able to hoard such amounts of wealth like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or anybody like those, when... I think I said this in the last time you interviewed us. Every day they wake up with the choice of having to end world hunger, and they don't every day. And so I think it's just, I know if I had that amount of money, I'd be so uncomfortable with myself knowing that I have billions and billions and billions. And yet there's people everywhere in the world, some of them that are having to wonder where their next meal is going to come from, or where they're going to get money for their children to go to school, or anything like that.
Yeah, right. What do people do with that much money anyway? I know that's naive, but I often think, you couldn't even spend that much money.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird.
And especially because Jeff Bezos is set to become the world's first trillionaire in the foreseeable future. I think it's by 2026, but don't quote me on that. You know, $1 trillion, that is quite a lot compared to people in Africa or people in Southeast Asia. People like in India or Bangladesh, that, like I said, they don't know where their next meal is coming from. They don't know where they're going to get their next source of clean water. So, yeah.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are you talking about redistribution of wealth?
Yeah,
I hear you. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Nobody needs a trillion. I mean, I know that sounds silly, Neil, in a way, but honestly, I often think, what are you doing? Just exactly. even if you keep like 10 million, that's quite a lot.
And I don't know why that's such a controversial statement
today.
No. Maybe, you know, one person shouldn't be able to hoard so much money and then not donate it to end world hunger, when it's perfectly in Jeff Bezos's budget, and he'll still have. And another example, inequality isn't just in places like Africa or Southeast Asia. It's also in places like Flint in America, who haven't had clean drinking water for a while.
It's also here, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you leave London, there is still poverty out in England.
Well, I have to say there is in London, you know, where I live in Southeast London, and there's a lot of poverty here, and I imagine there's probably going to be more hardship on its way. So I love your utopian wealth redistribution. Absolutely, bravo to that, Neil. And Sarah, do you have utopian dreams, and what might they be?
Just like everyone else does, I guess I do too, and again they're quite similar to Neil's. From like the kind of smaller sides of things, my first mindset is, if people could survive without plastic in the past, then they can now. It should not be that hard to make that change, and I can understand that maybe it's not that easy at the beginning, because to be fair, you know, we mention capitalism quite often, but me and Neil, we talk about this quite a lot, but it's really hard to be eco-friendly without capitalism. Because when you go to, you know, get something that's disposed, But if you were to go to get something that's more eco-friendly, it genuinely ends up costing way more than, you know, the non-eco-friendly version does. And that thing usually counts for technically many things that you look out to buy, probably other than reusable bags. And even if it saves you more money in the longer run, it still can be really, you know, not affordable to buy in the first place. So it's so hard and it's so controversial that it still makes complete sense to me why people can't go for more eco-friendly options even today, because it's not something that not everyone can do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's a very compassionate thing to recognise that, because in a way we need to do what we can do, but not be harsh when people can't do things because they can't do them. So I think that's a really beautiful and important part of sort of being compassionate in it all as well. Plastic and the history of plastic absolutely fascinates me, and I've written about it quite a lot in my new book, which I'm going to send you both a copy, and I'll put a little sticky note in the plastic bit because I won't talk about it now, but it's an interesting story. So that was what I wanted to say to you both, because you're both super intelligent and motivated and brilliant and informed, but probably you don't feel like you've got a great deal of power and agency at the moment, especially as you're not quite old enough to vote yet, etc. In that case, if you could say to adults, all adults, but particularly perhaps adults that are in positions of power, what do we need to do? What can we do to help? What should we be doing to ensure that your future is brighter? Sorry, I've got the hounds of the Baskervilles in the background. Neil, first of all.
So for, you know, regular, ordinary adults, I would say a really, really, really great way to cut down your carbon footprint would to not necessarily go vegan, but even just cutting out a little bit of meat from your diet can make a huge, huge improvement. Going vegan would be even better. And if you think to yourself, well, I like chocolate and I want to go vegan, but I just wouldn't, you know, I couldn't go vegan because of chocolate or ice cream or beef or pork, then you can keep chocolate or ice cream or beef or pork and then cut out everything else that you're okay with. I think it's better to slowly dip your toes into veganism rather than just to dive in and get quite a shock. I've been vegan, well, on and off vegan for about a year and full vegan for a few months now.
And it's easier now, right, Neil, isn't it? I've been vegan for 4 years now, vegetarian, sort of pretty much my whole life. And actually, when I switched from being vegetarian to vegan, I thought, this is going to be easy. But actually, it was a little bit of a culture shock because of the whole cheese thing to start with. But one thing I have noticed, even in the last few months, I'm like, well, this has got easier. It's kind of a thing now, which has made it easier. But do you know why do you think giving up meat helps in terms of making the future brighter or looking after the environment? In case someone's listening and they don't really know why.
I think the agriculture side of, well, first of all, if we take an example like McDonald's. McDonald's has used land that was part of the Amazon that was burnt down to make room for cattle grazing. And we've seen more of the Amazon being burned down or chopped down or cut down by the new, well, not new anymore. I suppose he's been in office for quite a few years now, but Jair Bolsonaro, he's also cut down a lot of forest in the Amazon to make room for agriculture. And so I think that by going vegan and by purchasing less meat and less animal products, you're directly taking away your money from those forms of agriculture. And even if you still do want to eat meat, I would say going local would be also a good option. So there's less air miles as well.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's a really doable thing, isn't it, to make, as you say, Neil, small, or if you're feeling bolder, sort of big changes to your diet. I think that's a great suggestion because it is something that anyone or a lot of people could consider. So I think that's absolutely brilliant. How about you, Sarah? What's your advice to what could be a small action that people could take to make an improvement?
I guess so. This is something that I definitely can't do right now, specifically because of my age. But I'm completely begging all adults out there or anyone over the age of 18, when you come round to voting, please do actually, you know, look for what these people are willing to do in their campaigns. Do actually read about them. You know, don't just vote for people because you've heard them a lot or anything like that, especially if you're at a younger age, probably below 20, you know, if you're just starting to get into things. Please do look out for who you're voting for, because it makes such a big difference. And especially when you're in a country like the UK or if you're in the US, it does make a huge difference. That's probably my number one. And my number two, in some sense, is so you'd already spoke about upcycling before. I myself actually do a lot of upcycling. I own my own sewing machine, things like that. So I do everything myself. And all I've got to say is I've ended up doing a lot of research about fast fashion in the past few weeks. And genuinely, I encourage everyone to go do technically thrifting, no matter what, and do continue to donate your clothes. Because what usually happens in, you know, big companies that produce clothing, when they, you know, can't stop, when they have the stock that they can't sell, they usually either end up burning it or they, you know, donate it and send it to charity shops and places like that. But again, charity shops end up trying to sell what they've got, and when they can't sell it, they themselves either start to burn it or they send it to other low-income countries, and this is the case for US and the UK. And then again, because there's a very high amount of clothes being sent to other low-income countries, now there's a lot of clothing that's either laying around on the streets or again being burnt. So it's a vicious cycle. And what I think needs to happen is you need to completely cut out new productions of clothing. And so I think everyone should be focusing on donating and thrifting constantly to be able to, in some sense, just lower that cycle down. So it's a small change, but if many people look into doing it, then I do think it would be effective.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a massive fan of small actions. And the reason is I think they're possible, so you don't feel defeated, you can do it, and they can accumulate. So, you know, it's like grains of sand, isn't it? Make a beach.
Yeah.
And then I think if someone else sees you doing it and sees it being fun because, Neil, you're eating a delicious vegan dinner, or Sarah, you're wearing like a really amazing thing that you've made or upcycled, I think other people can get captured by seeing it and seeing it's possible. So it's brilliant. I'm assuming that both of you two are still going to be involved in activism. Well, I know you are, because you're both obviously really passionate about it. Neil, have you got any plans to get involved in any of the other Extinction Rebellion? Actually, you're back at school, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I'm in my GCSE year now, but that's still not going to stop me from getting out there, making my... So I'm going to continue protesting with Fridays for Future. I'm going to continue protesting with Extinction Rebellion, because I think at the end of the day, it's making my voice heard. And this is such a cliche, cheesy thing to say, but, you know, if my kids or my grandkids ask me what did I do to fight global warming, I will have something to say. I can say, well, I protested, and I won't silent.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you mind, Neil, actually just talking a little bit, just in case people aren't aware of what Fridays for Future is and what happens and how that works?
Yeah, so I don't know if this is true, but I went to, I think it's the second Friday for Future protest. It was started by Greta Thunberg's school strike, The Climate.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a student-led protest group against global warming and climate change.
So it's something that perhaps, I was just thinking, if someone's listening, that's something that somebody could get involved in as well, because a lot of schools are engaging in that, aren't they?
And Fridays for Future also, it's not just students who participate. I have seen a lot of adults. I've seen a few teachers protest as well. I've seen parents of small babies protest, and you know, they were all saying that they were protesting for their children, so they wouldn't protest in the future. So I'd say you know, everybody's welcome at Fridays for Future protest, not just children.
Lots of ways of getting involved. And how about you, Sarah? Do you think you're still going to be getting involved?
Definitely. I have no doubt about it. Even though it's my GCSE year, I'm still very much looking into get into many protests as much as I can. Specifically because I've come to the realisation, especially looking at our past, that protests can be very useful. Me and Neil, we both went to the A-level protest that took part last month. And just from such a small part, for us, it was only a day of protesting, but we saw the difference it could make. And I think this probably goes for the both of us. I'm sure Neil would agree, but that really inspired me to continue with my activism because I could see the clear change that my protesting had made. And it, in some sense, I felt like I kept a cause.
Sorry? What happened? Could you talk a little bit about that, the A-level protest and what happened?
Yeah, sure, of course. So there was an issue with students' A-level marks as because of lockdown coronavirus, many students didn't actually go into their exams. And supposedly it was going to be teacher-assessed grades, but due to the algorithm, many students got a different grade than what their teacher had given them, or it was completely unrelated to their mocks or their expected grades, which then led to a huge issue. And then it started to become obvious that the issue was different when you looked at state schools and private schools, and it became a huge chaotic situation for students who were going to normal schools rather than private schools. And it did kind of in some sense depend on their postcodes and where they lived, which was a clear show of classism. So yeah, that's what the issue was, and so we protested against it as a whole.
And the protest was effective?
Yeah, it was very effective because at the end of it, the A-level students got their teacher assessed grades. There was no algorithm, and so the GCSE students also ended up getting the same thing as the protests were just a few days before the GCSE results came out.
I think it's brilliant that you did that, and you're absolutely right. It's really important, I think, especially when you're a young activist, to get involved in something and see that it works. Because circling back to hope, but it does give you hope because you are like, okay, so that's really encouraging. I think, was it encouraging for you, that experience?
It really was. It showed me so many different things on a different level, because for both me and Neil, our main sort of reason for going was we saw injustice, and that's something to point out at all times for us, no matter if it affects us or not. But we are also very much aware of the fact that Corona still isn't over, and because we're GCSE students right now, there's pretty much the chance that we can still experience the same thing next year if we don't go into our exams. And so we knew that if we don't stand up for it now, then we won't have the opportunity to do it again. And it was just either do it now or don't do it ever again kind of situation for us both.
It's amazing. Amazing you did that. And what a result. What a brilliant result. I'm just going to ask you, if I may, just before we go, and you two, you've been amazingly brilliant. It's been really a pleasure to speak to you both. Neil, first of all, you might not have an answer to this, but I just wondered if you had any thoughts about what you want to do, as a job or a career, or what you want to, or have you thought that far ahead, or are you just enjoying learning?
Well, in the future, I'd like to go to University College London for my undergraduate. Then I'm learning German at the moment, so I'd like to go to the Free University of Berlin to get my master's. And then in the future, I think I'd like to go into teaching to be a history teacher. And I do plan on living in Germany as well.
I used to live in Germany, in Munich. It's very nice. And Berlin's an amazing city, so I hope that you get there. That would be wonderful. What a lovely ambition. And Sarah, how about you? Is it acting for you, or...?
I'm in quite a, you know, I guess like a controversial situation with myself right now, actually. I really don't know. There's been times where I've considered doing two undergrads. There's been times where I've decided to do many different things. But I'm either considering to either study medicine or to do criminology for the case. If I do study medicine, I'm hopefully going to be looking into neuroscience and neurosurgery. And if it's criminology, I hope to specialise on DNA and blood, or if not, it's going to be something history and politics related. But again, I really can't decide with what I...
That's amazing. I'm so sorry. I only said acting was because you said the national...
Yeah.
I'm so sorry to make that assumption.
No, not at all. It's very normal. And because I am in the National Youth Theatre, they actually have something called the Rep Company, which is basically a 10-month course. It's very different to drama school, so I won't genuinely get a full degree or anything from doing it, but it genuinely puts all students right into the industry, because my membership is now active until I'm 26. So I will always have the opportunity, if I want, to just take a gap year and to audition to get into the Rep Company. And so if I do, I could actually very well get into acting as well.
It's really nice to hear, actually, because you know what? I often think this as well. I think when we're really young, we're sort of encouraged to make a choice. And actually, I can't remember anyone saying to me, but then after like 10 years, you could do something completely different. When, of course, you can. You really can. I can. You know, I have. You could switch from criminology to circus. No one can stop you. thank you so much for speaking with me, both of you. I really appreciate it. And I just want to say thank you for being such excellent human beings and protesting and totally with you, totally support you out there as well whenever I can be. And honestly, speaking to you two that day and today, as well as speaking to other young activists, makes me immensely hopeful and look forward to seeing all the other amazing things you get up to. So thank you both. Hopefully, well, I might see you again in Parliament Square another day.
Chances are I probably will.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Sarah and Neil, and we're really inspired by some of the things they said. I certainly was. I particularly loved when Sarah said we saw injustice, and that's something to point out at all times, no matter if it affects us or not. I think that's a lesson for us all. So amazing young people, both of them, and there's lots more of them out there. So time for us to pull up our socks, grown-ups, oldies, and meet them. Meet the challenge. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you'll join me again next week. And do get in touch if you have got something to say about hope and you'd like to come and chat with me. You can find me on bernadette@thewhiterabbit.org.uk, on Twitter at Betty Russell, that's BetteRussell, Instagram at Bernadette Russell, Facebook at Bernadette Russell Writes, or on my website, which is www.bernadetterussell.com. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day or evening. Bye.